This podcast is brought to you by WRFL, Radio Free Lexington. Find us online at WRFL.fm. Catch us on your FM radio while you're in Central Kentucky at 88.1 FM, all the way to the left. Thank you for listening, and please be sure to subscribe.
Welcome to Campus Voices, where each week we look at some key issues that affect UK students, the UK campus, and the Lexington community. Campus Voices is created by Journalism 304 students with the help of the journalism faculty. Please send any questions to news@wrfl.fm.
Good evening and welcome to Campus Voices, a program where we take a look at what's going on in Lexington and across the UK campus communities. As always, I'm your host, Maggie Davis, and today we'll be discussing active shooter preparation and crisis management. Last year, late in the fall semester, the University of Kentucky had a potential school shooter threat. Sophomore student Haley Duvall took to Snapchat to make false threats geared toward the Whitehall classroom building on campus. She was originally charged in Fayette County with second-degree terroristic threatening and falsely reporting an incident, according to online records. Duvall faced 15 federal charges of threatening interstate communications and false information regarding explosives. The University of Kentucky sent out alerts to UK students to keep them informed and up to date. On the day of the incident, President Eli Capilouto explained in an email, quote, "Because threats of violence cause anxiety and fear, we will have an additional police presence on campus today to ensure everyone can attend class and do their work with confidence in their safety," end quote. However, many students still did not feel safe attending campus the next day, causing many classes to be canceled and low attendance in those classes that did still meet. WRFL reporter Jordan Colquitt has more on college-related school shootings and threats.
Within recent years, the number of school shootings on high school and college campuses have dramatically increased. According to Citizens Crime Commission of New York City, aiming at students, the college gun violence epidemic, shooting incidents have increased 153%. According to ABC News, California State University Northridge received two mass shooting threats in less than a week in 2018. They ended up giving their final exams off campus. William Taylor, president of the International Association of Campus Law Enforcement Administrators and chief of police at San Juanito College, said death threats targeting college campuses are not unusual, but rarely do so many materialize within a short time frame. In 2015, there were shooting threats and bomb threats at Cape Cod Community College in Alvarina, Fitchburg State, Hampton, Harvard, Keene, and Princeton in just 1 week. Although no shootings took place, nor were there any bombs found, some institutions closed buildings and shut down campuses out of precaution. Reporting for WRFL Radio, I'm Jordan Colquitt.
Well, some alarming information there, of course, but first, as always, we're joined by a few experts in the studio today to give us their input. Today, we have University of Kentucky Police Department Officer Alan Saylor. He's a 35-year veteran of the UK Police Force and holds 5 certifications from the American Crime Prevention Institute, where he has gained his expertise consulting on security and crime issues. He's also the key instructor on active shooter and aggressor trainings for UKPD and has therefore taught thousands of individuals throughout the Commonwealth since 2005. Today, we're also joined by attorney John Hain, who has been a prosecutor in Lexington for many years. He's currently the first assistant at the Fayette County Attorney's Office, where he supervises the office's prosecutors and staff. Wow, two incredible experts in here with us today. Thank you both so much for being with us. Obviously, I want to start sort of at the very beginning here. We heard those numbers from our reporter, Jordan Colquitt, about just how much school shootings have increased in the last few years. Officer Saylor, we'll start with you. I know, obviously, there's not one, you know, quick answer to that problem, but why do you think we're seeing such an increase in these threats of violence?
Well, I think it's kind of the fix for a lot of misguided individuals who see this as a solution to whatever issue or problem that they're having in their lives, and they exact their revenge on those who they find are causing the most issue to them. And so I think it's prevalent in our society because of that.
Right, Mr. Hayne, we'll send it over to you now. Like we just heard, Haley Duvall made those threats on campus towards UK students. She received 15 federal charges based on those ideas of threatening and falsifying records. Does that feel typical to you in your experience as a prosecutor?
That does feel typical. Those types of charges based on that conduct would certainly be typical. It did start in state court and then was adopted by the federal prosecutors and ended up being resolved there in United States District Court.
When an incident like this happens, does that student alone take full legal responsibility for that issue, or is there some sort of liability involved with the school, school officials, school police, administrators, or does that all fall on the individual at charge?
When it comes to a criminal case, all the liability, so to speak, falls on the individual who's making the threats. Yes.
Right. Officer Saylor, after that incident occurred, did you see any sort of change in terms of how the UKPD sort of handled incidents like this? Has your idea sort of shifted, okay, this is possible even on this campus, or were you sort of already in that mindset based on the current climate?
We've always been in the mindset. Most people are not aware that we did have an incident back in 1986 with a individual that came onto campus and seize one of our buildings. But we've always been of the mindset as police officers, because we train at least twice a year for incidents like this, mm-hmm. Where our officers are trained in responding to active aggressive situations, and then we are preparing our faculty, staff, and student and communities throughout the Commonwealth, because I've been invited just about every corner of Kentucky to give this presentation. And so with that, what needs to be understood is that we could be prepared,
right,
as a police agency. But statistically, what's being shown is that 75% of the time, we're not going to be the first line of defense. It's going to be the public, the community.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very seldom that police get on scene and confront the aggressor. It's usually the reactions, hopefully proper reactions on the part of the citizens that that are on the first line of defense there.
Mm-hmm. You bring up an interesting point there, sort of your relationship with students creating this sort of open dialogue. Do you feel like the UK police officers on this campus have that open dialogue with students here, or is it more of sort of that separation where you feel like, oh, we can't talk to you about our concerns?
No, I think it's quite the opposite. Service is first, community is first with our agency. And the sad part about it is, as soon as we develop a relationship with our student body in particular, they change out every
right.
4 years.
Quick turnover rate.
So I think to some extent we do it better. University policing as a whole does it better, because we know that we're going to be in a constant state of relation, mm-hmm. and training and having dialogue with our community. And I think because of that and the redundancy of it, we learn from it and we perfect it.
Mr. Hayne, we'll send it back to you now. When an issue like this, unfortunately, you know, can and does happen on campus, is there some sort of protocol in place typically in terms of, okay, who needs to be contacted? Obviously, the police are called, but from there, do you contact the parents? Do you contact other students, faculty? From a legal standpoint, who really needs to be in the know first?
I think from a legal standpoint, who needs to be in the know first? If there are victims, certainly the victim's family. If there are no victims, I think all agencies need to be on board. First, UK police, and then local Lexington police, perhaps FBI, federal agencies, and the local prosecutor's office, the county attorney's office, Commonwealth attorney's office, and U.S. attorney's office. I think it's a collaborative effort. Thankfully, nothing like that has happened here, but it is a group effort when something this catastrophic happens.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, we'll switch gears just a little bit now to social media. Social media has had a huge impact, obviously, on the generation that's currently studying here at UK. Our Douglas Schwartz, the chief of University of Missouri Police, said, quote, "Social media is a real dilemma, and it puts university administration and law enforcement both in a tough position to evaluate those threats. Much like the situation we saw here at UK, Mizzou officials learned of social media threats from students one evening, and within hours, the police had determined that neither threat had actually come from the immediate area. Like we saw here at UK, some Missouri professors canceled classes, and many students were too afraid to step on campus. Western Washington University suspended class after a post suggested lynching a student leader, and Washington College in Maryland closed for several days after a distraught student disappeared with a gun. These threats of mass violence on campuses have proliferated through social media, but unfortunately, most end up being hoaxes. WRFL reporter Jordan Colquitt reports on the effect social media has on these particular threats of violence.
According to USA Today, there were 638 reported threats targeting schools across the nation from February 15th to February 27th, 30 to 35 of those being in Kentucky. This has left school administrators and authorities walking a fine line in dealing with threat credibility. Mary Ellen O'Toole, a former FBI profiler, said, "Before taking intense action, it's important to track the threat and see whether the person behind it even has meaning to the act." In 2017, non-UK student DeAndre Davis was arrested after concealing a gun on campus. He sent out threatening tweets on Twitter in October 2016. UKPD was able to respond in 90 seconds after the call came in. Davis admitted he posted the tweets, but said he didn't plan to kill anyone. For WRFL, I'm Jordan Colquitt.
Well, we just heard there about some of these issues surrounding social media and threats of violence. But Officer Shaler, I want to start with you here. How do school officials or police officers go through that process of determining, okay, is this a legitimate threat or is this someone just on social media?
I think that's part of the investigative process. When we're called by citizens within our community, we respond to those and we take them in the light and seriousness of our community until we know otherwise. And so we have to get on scene. We have to, if there's an individual like we just what was just demonstrated that we had, we get there, we determine whether or not there is a legitimate threat or not.
Right. We saw this issue a few months ago, if I am remembering correctly, regarding someone tweeting threats towards Trinity High School in Louisville. That person, I believe, ended up being prosecuted. Mr. Haynes, are you familiar with that situation?
I'm familiar. I've read about it in the newspapers, yes.
You think people in that situation deserve to be prosecuted?
Oh, absolutely. When you make a threat against a school, a university, whether or not you think it's funny or not, I think prosecuting that individual sends a message that that's not tolerated, because we have to take all of these very seriously, and we are going to take them very seriously, so we can prohibit people from doing that. So we know if someone is doing it, it'll most likely be perceived as a intentional crime, and it'll be prosecuted.
Right, really setting that strong precedent with that one particular individual as
that's
to not
right.
encourage others. Interesting. Okay, Officer Saylor, we'll go back to you now. When you talk about these students in social media and sort of, you know, we have to treat it like a threat, but then if it turns out not being a threat, does that sort of diminish a student's expectation of, okay, sometimes it might actually be a real emergency and next time I'm not going to be as worried?
Well, we always take everyone on equal plane. The thing of it is that what a student needs to understand is that, particularly if they're housed here at the university, they're attending classes here, that we may not have a criminal case on them, but they still may be facing administrative sanctions for what
right.
they did. So that's something that is not taken lightly, I know, by this administration at the university or the administration of my agency. And so if anyone does do that, we'll investigate it to the fullest. If we have a criminal charge, we will press that charge. If not, then the administration here at the university will go through their processes.
Right. And social media has sort of become almost like an endless timeline, a constant stream of information at all times, nearly impossible for one small group of individuals to monitor. When you see these social media threats, do those typically come to you from students, or do you have a team specifically actively looking for them?
Well, I think a lot of times these come out to individuals who would be the victim in these cases, and then that's passed down to us and to other individuals that we have that are particularly trained to take care of these type of investigations when it comes to social media.
Right, and we heard the chief of the University of Missouri Police earlier talk about sort of the dilemma that these social media platforms cause. Do you see it as a dilemma, or do you see it as more, okay, this is just easier to be aware of potential violence?
I think it can be both, but I think social media has gives everybody the ability to hide behind something.
Mm-hmm.
And at least they think they can hide behind it, and eventually it usually ends up coming out. You see it over and over again. right. where these
it's
threats
public.
Have been.
It's a public yeah. platform.
Yes. So it's, I think anyone that would put something out there like that, they're bound to be caught one way or another because people are going to say something. We live in a society right now that's very cautious about these things because mm-hmm. we have had some tragic incidents that have happened in our history, and because of that, people are now reporting those more often than they ever have before.
Right, Mr. Hain, we'll go back to you now. In your field of work, have you seen social media sort of impacting your work with the public or how cases are even coming to you?
Oh, absolutely. We, not just the topic we're discussing, but a lot of our cases, harassment communications, mm-hmm. terroristic threatening, so many of our cases now are originated from social media, Facebook, Twitter, Snapchat. Since I started to now, it's increased 100%. We never used to have Snapchat threats or Twitter threats or Facebook harassment. Now we see that on a daily basis.
Right. And sort of touching on this idea of like, well, it's just there for a little bit and then it goes away. That's not necessarily the case in terms of the legal aspect of it. There's always going to be screenshots or some sort of proof. You see that sort of like sticking with people no matter if, oh, well, I thought it was gone.
That's right. Well, it's never truly gone. And with the victim, it's never gone. Even though someone thinks that even though the post is, they've deleted the post, we still have a victim of a crime there who's mm-hmm. been seriously affected by these posts, this online social bullying or threatening, that type of thing.
Right, and that truly never really goes away.
That's right.
Well, we heard a line earlier from Dr. Capiluto's email that went out to UK students earlier in the show, but there is also a UK alert system in place for similar emergencies. Other universities around the US also send out similar alerts to students who have subscribed to receive them. Like we see here at UK, these alerts help keep students and faculty informed on potentially dangerous situations that are happening on or around campus. In February of 2018, a student was injured after being shot in his dorm room at Norfolk State University, according to the NSU Student Alert System. WRFL reporter Jordan Colquitt spoke with a few UK students on how they feel about the alerts the university sends to them.
Schools all across the country have systems in place to make their students aware of situations happening on or around campus. UK sends out text alerts and makes phone calls to students to warn them of what's going on around the area. However, some students feel like more could be done.
The call and text system, I guess, does a good job, but maybe there's a mark that we're kind of missing.
Universities are using new hire and new student orientations and email announcements to get students and faculty to sign up for alerts. Having the ability to distribute crisis information to a campus has its challenges, and junior Sarah Johnson agrees. She also believes the university does a pretty good job at getting information out to students.
I think that by allowing it through call, text, or email, that basically hits all of the main methods of communication.
Johnson says sometimes messages can get lost in translation.
I sometimes feel like when there are crises on campus, there's not one source of accurate information. And so a lot of information gets misconstrued or exaggerated. And then kids on campus tend to freak out about the situation at hand.
For WRFL, I'm Jordan Colquitt.
Well, we heard a little bit about the background there behind the UK alert system, but Officer Taylor, in terms of sort of how that happens, you know, who's in charge of determining, okay, this is serious enough for that message to be sent out to UK students? Who makes that decision?
Yeah, those decisions are made, can be made by a communications operator in our dispatch center. And each alert that goes out, we try to be very careful that it is an emergency circumstance. We don't want anybody to become, sort of speak, tone deaf to anything that mm-hmm. we're sending out.
Right.
We want them to take it seriously. But when we do that, we also send it out through our LiveSafe app. We send it out through our social media sites, through Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. We are pushing out as much information as we can to our community to make them aware of what's going on about as instantaneously as we possibly can.
And what sort of crimes are considered maybe, quote, serious enough to warrant one of those searches?
I think any crime that's reoccurring or occurring that's within the campus community is reportable, and we try to get that out to them so people are aware of it. It even goes down to as far as, you know, we make announcements for, you know, winter-related announcements and, mm-hmm. and so on and so forth. So you all are aware as to whether or not there's class and that kind of stuff. So we go from kind of the minor thing to the more serious things with that. And to be specific about which one is reportable and what's not, it's not my area of purview. I think that would be something that need to be asked of crisis management.
Right. So in terms of that department, that's separate in terms of like, okay, crisis management is over here, UKPD is over here.
No, it's under the same umbrella as the police agency. It's just a different division within the agency.
And they would work with the UK administration to determine when.
Very closely.
Right, because a lot of those, my parents, for instance, also have signed up to receive those. It's not just me. Like, my mom also gets those phone calls. So for her to get it, I know she's going to freak out, and then I'm going to get a phone call. So I would expect it to be, you know, only for serious. Otherwise, I'm going to get a phone call from my mom every 3 weeks.
And we encourage parents in the orientation process to the university that parents participate in that, because we seek out their help in getting that message out to each individual student so they'll know. Because we know parents have a special interest in each one of the students here. So they're going to call them up and say, where are you at? What's going on? Stay put. Whatever the advice that a parent would give in that situation. And so I always, when I'm giving the orientation presentations, I always tell parents, please participate in this because we need your help.
Right. Mr. Hayne, over to you. Now, we're talking about the sort of release of information, having to decide like, okay, this is what's relevant, this is what needs to go out to the public, and this is what we should withhold. Is that sort of a question you have to think about in your own, you know, realm of a career?
That's right. It's a little bit different for the police than for a prosecutor. If the prosecutor chooses to put out information, the Kentucky Bar Association, American Bar Association, really limit what a prosecutor can say publicly and to the media. But in a case of a campus shooting, prosecutors can put out statements that, one, certain information that could help lead to the capture of the individual, or if there's a threat, an ongoing threat to the public, information such as the name, employment, spouse, those type of things, so that people generally are on the lookout for this person and can avoid the situation.
Right. Officer Taylor, you brought up the Live Safe app. I wanted to go back to that. I know it's something that has really sort of been pushed in the last couple of years, but personally, I don't know a lot of individual students who utilize it. So what are sort of like the, obviously there's a lot of pros to it, but what's sort of keeping people from really using it?
I think what's keeping people a lot from using it is, I think there's a misinformation that they feel like if we sign on to this, now the police somehow know where they're at and what's going on kind of thing. But really, it's prompted on the student, faculty, and staff's end. We are simply monitors of it. You guys have to activate us to be a participant in whatever's going on in the situation.
Right. So how does it work? A student opens the app and there's one function, or there's multiple things?
There's multiple functions. I can tell you that it has four major functions in it. And one of them is that you can report anonymously or not to the university police any crime that is going on. You not only report it, but you could also take pictures of it or video it and send that to us, and we could actually see that. The other aspect is that you can text us or you can call us. And by doing that, we immediately know where you're at. And the reason we immediately know that is because in a lot of these situations, and people are distressed, they want to say what the issue is that they want us to know about, but forget to tell us where they're at. Mm. And so we immediately know where they're at. We can expeditiously get police to them and help them out. And then there's a number of resources on the app, such as if you're a new student, you can go on there, find the building you're trying to look for. It'll give you a walking path. You can invite a friend to watch you if you feel uncomfortable. There's a lot of different things about this app that's good for students to have. Now, here's what I'm getting kickback on. They're saying they are afraid that if we get on there and they start perusing the app and learning what it will do and how it can help them, they're afraid that they might press a wrong button. Right. Well, if you press a wrong button, you press a wrong button. Just tell the dispatcher, hey, I'm sorry, this was an accident. Mm-hmm. Nobody is going to verbally abuse them for doing such a thing. It's going to be something that it's a learning experience for all of us and for them. And we're getting more participants in it, but I think a lot of students fear it because they're afraid if they sign on to it, somehow we know they've signed on to it. Well, yeah, we do have a database of everybody that's signed on, but we can't go out there and reach out to you. You have to reach out to us.
Right. Okay. Student-driven.
Student-driven.
Okay. Interesting. Well, the LiveSafe app obviously is one great way for students to feel more protected and more secure on campus, but feeling prepared and informed is also key. To help students feel prepared in the event of an active shooter, UK and UKPD are working together to offer active shooter response training courses. WRFO reporter Jordan Colquitt reports on these trainings.
Last year, UKPD held an active shooter training on campus. However, only one student showed up. Some students say if more courses were offered, they would attend, but feel like they weren't advertised enough. Junior Alexis Klein says she would attend an active shooter training course, but feels teachers and other faculty should as well.
If you leave it open to students, like, not everyone's going to go. So if there is an active shooter, like, you can't guarantee that a student who knows what to do in an active shooter situation is going to be in that specific class.
Junior Victoria Gray says active shooter trainings are necessary, especially for college students.
I think it's something important that all of us need to know, and I think all students should know how to handle themselves in a certain situation if there is an active shooter, because right now I feel like there's no protocol for what students should actually do. I feel like if there were active shooter on campus, nobody would know what to do.
Sarah Johnson says one of her professors did something that she believes everyone should do, and it only took 5 minutes.
I also know that in one of my classes that I had, the professor on the very first day went over what we would do in an active shooter situation in that particular classroom. And I know that was really helpful for me because it was something I never really considered before.
UK Police Chief Joe Monroe says active shooter trainings are for the benefit of UK students.
We think it's important that they understand, one, how to protect themselves in the event of an active aggressor, comes into a classroom or into their building, how they should respond. The second point of that is to making sure that they know how the police will respond. So that will enable them to help us to help them.
Chief Monroe says students can request group trainings as well. For WRFL, I'm Jordan Colquitt.
Well, like we just heard, UKPD has previously tried to set up these active shooter trainings with students here at UK, but the turnout, unfortunately, wasn't so great. Officer Saylor, do you believe this is something students and faculty should be required to attend? Obviously, it's well-intentioned with important information, and yet people weren't really in attendance for that first one.
I don't know if active aggression prevention courses should be required. I'm not sure if I really looked at that very closely, but I certainly believe the class must be available. Mm-hmm. And so to go back to the interviews that you just had, we actually started having open sessions for active shooters just this past year. Yeah, it's starting out slow, but this year we're having better attendance, and people are coming out to the open sessions that we are having here in the Student Center. And I can tell you that I think it's going to continue to grow from there. We're having them about every month. We're not having mm-hmm. one in May. We will have one again in June, and then we'll schedule out the year from there. There will be one at least once a month from here on out, and we're basically mandated that even if we have one that shows up, we're going to train.
Right.
We're going to teach.
And for students who are interested in attending those workshops, where can they find more information?
We usually make an announcement that comes out on UK Now, or okay. we put it out on our social media sites and let everyone know that where it's going to be, what time it will be. We try to mix up the time from the evening hours at mm-hmm. 6 or at noon. So if you're having lunch or whatever, you can bring your lunch with you. We'll teach the class while you eat your lunch, or if for some reason your class schedule says, you need to come at 6 instead, then we will present that class no matter what.
Right. And going back to those interviews you brought up, one of the students mentioned that her professor actually sort of took them through a little bit of, okay, this is what we're going to do if this were to happen. Is that something that you'd like to see the administration sort of push and encourage professors to do with their students?
I don't think it's a bad ideal. I think it's something that you discuss at the beginning of the semester, and you know it's there on the syllabus. And then You know, if they ever want to refer back to it, they could. I don't think it's a bad idea. Now, whether I'm a person that says that it should be done or it shouldn't be done, that's a different story. But right. I think this is something we do a lot at our professional development at the Police Academy in Richmond. We go over emergencies and what we're going to do, that kind of thing. And we don't talk about it again for the rest of the week while we go through professional development. So it does kind of lets the student know this is what we're going to do in this circumstance.
Right. And obviously it's a huge issue and it's hard to sort of pinpoint down into just a few sentences. But if you were to give students advice that this is how to keep yourself safe in an emergency situation, what would that message to those students be?
Well, you got to take the class. You really do. You got to take the class because, it's one thing to have an idea of what you're going to do. It's another thing to have the tools to know what to do. And, I always say in the class when I'm teaching it, the hammer is a basic tool in the tool shed. Mm-hmm. The hammer does a lot of great things, but you can't cut with it. You got to have a saw to do that.
Right.
And so the more tools you have in the toolbox being your mind, the better off you're going to be in one of these situations and being able to respond to it. And a lot of people in every one of these situations have done a lot of right things and survived them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so this is what we teach in this class.
Right. Well, obviously, this is a topic we could go on and on about for hours, but unfortunately, we're just about out of time for today. Thank you again so much to our guests, Officer Alan Saylor and Mr. John Hain. And as always, thank you for listening. Campus Voices will be back on the air at the same time next week when we'll be discussing the troubling and growing issue of depression in student athletes. For WRFL Campus Voices, I'm Maggie Davis. Good night.
Hey there. If you're enjoying this podcast from WRFL Lexington, you may enjoy our live radio stream at WRFL.fm, and of course via radio at 88.1 FM in the Central Kentucky area. We have a wide variety of programs you're sure to enjoy. Just go to WRFL.fm/schedule and see what programs appeal most to you. Thanks again for listening to this podcast from WRFL Lexington.